Hey, how you doing? Party, man.
Yeah, brother, like, dig it. Solid. Right on.
Welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you, Calvin. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well, Earl. It's looking like it's going to be another beautiful day.
Yeah, man, it is, man. It's absolutely gorgeous. You know, yesterday afternoon, I was marveling that if ever there was a perfect day, it was absolutely yesterday. And, you know, the low humidity, a little tinge of fall. But I was out and enjoyed all of it and hope everybody else did. And you better continue it because, you know, these days, you know, they'll be gone before you know it. I mean, it's already Wednesday, man, right?
That's right.
Right. So I want to welcome back an old friend. None other than Mr. Alan Borsick. He is a senior fellow in law and public policy at Marquette Law School and a writer for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and all things education. Good morning to you, sir. How you doing?
Hi, and good morning to you.
You know, it's always good having you on. It's been a while, but I mean, school has begun in some areas and will be beginning after Labor Day and others. And I can't help it. I've been talking about school over the last, several weeks, Alan, about what has happened. And I've been basically saying to people to keep their grubby hands off of education and allow educators in many areas, and none of them are perfect. And yes, people have a right to, you know, to question some things. But for heaven's sakes, Alan, there's something going on that's over the top as it relates to education.
Well, it's always been a political subject. I suspect that's been true for 1,000 years. But it's become so politicized and everything so weighted and freighted with politics and people's agendas and no interest in compromising or listening to other people, and everyone's just ruined for a fight so often. And I keep thinking, well, how about if we all calm down a little bit and just focus on teaching kids?
You know, Alan, that's the whole purpose, you know, of what my conversations have been about, because, you know, you and I've been around a while and you've been in this education game for a long, long time, but have you ever seen it, you know, as unsavory as it is now?
It's a good question, because it's easy to make the past seem rosier than it really was. But nonetheless, I'd say I agree with you. It's so hostile and so combative, and the focus is frequently on issues that actually are not worth as much attention as they get. You know, I prefer to focus on reading, writing, attendance, fairness to all kids, and so on. But yeah, no, I think the politics and just the climate around these issues is worse than ever.
Let me ask you, I don't know how many, was it a decade or more ago, a decision was made to go to whole language as opposed to, it may have been 2 decades ago, as opposed to phonics.
Whole language goes back to about the 1980s.
Oh, that long
70s.
Ago.
Yeah.
Well, and so people keep asking why children can't read. Why did they change phonics when we all knew that that worked? And in some instances, they finally decided to go back to phonics. Do you know why they made those decisions?
Well, why is a tough question, but the what and the trends are pretty clear. And there's been a big surge. I've been eager to write about this the last, 6 months or so. There's been a big surge nationwide growing in the last several years, and in Wisconsin in the last bunch of months to get back onto more of a phonics-oriented path, what's now called the science of reading, which actually goes beyond phonics, but it's phonics is the leading feature. And that led to passage of a bill in the Wisconsin legislature, largely backed by Republicans, but with some Democratic support, to require by several years from now, it'll take some time to implement this science of reading phonics approach. Governor Evers signed it, maybe a little bit reluctantly, and a bunch of the reading establishment people, the Teachers Union, and the Wisconsin State Reading Association, which is kind of the establishment for reading teachers, are still unhappy about this, but it is the law now. Wisconsin becomes something like the 31st or 32nd state in the country that's going to be switching to more of a phonics approach. I mean, when whole language rose and it emphasized more like reading whole words and using clues and pictures and context to do it, it worked for certain kids, or let's say a lot of kids will learn to read no matter how they're taught. But a lot of kids were left behind. And needless to say, they were disproportionately the ones who
lived in poor communities. Live in poor communities and whatnot.
And the notion phonics, which really boils down to sounding out letters and putting them together in words, and people sometimes criticize us for not emphasizing the meaning, but when it's done right, the meaning is part of it, picking up on the comprehension. So, you know, there were kids who just couldn't read a word they weren't familiar with, and when it's done well, and I've seen it done well, even in schools right around the Milwaukee area, there seems to be some growing success to using this science of reading approach. So it's coming in Wisconsin. That's one of the really big changes that's just getting underway with this school year, although, as I said, it'll take several years to see it come to fruition, and you hope it makes things better. I mean, reading is a first-rate crisis in education, and especially in Wisconsin. We have the biggest, as we know, black and white gaps in reading success in the country. Even among white kids, reading isn't so good overall. A third of all kids in Wisconsin, all kids, read in the bottom bracket of the categories of ability, the below basic level, as it's called. And you know, what can you do in the long run if you can't read well? And name me a job, it's about any job, that doesn't involve understanding what's going on, and that means reading, certainly all everything on computers, you name it. So it's a first-rate crisis, and there is a fairly big response at this point with this new law. Let's hope it helps.
You know, Alan, you said, you know, a big response, but, you know, going back to the whole language, in the 80s, well, you know, how many generations of children have we lost because of that? And it's long overdue. How much of this do you think is tied into, rarely are children reading books anymore. And I don't know. I mean, the computers, the technology, I mean, can that replace the book, or just having a book? I often go into the libraries of some of the schools that I've been in over the last 12 years, and there's still books there, but there are cobwebs over all of them. And it's like nobody uses that medium anymore. You know, does that matter?
Well, I'm an old person too. I'm a big book person, and I think that the notion that books are passé is really a bad idea, that books should be very current, you know, reading books to kids, reading books with kids, which is even a better, is really important. You can do a ton on computers, on all these tablets and so on. And as you get into anything on computers, you're doing reading, but the notion of just immersing yourself in something, I find it, and I think I'm not the only one by any means, it's not just old people, find it hard to immerse myself in something I'm reading on a computer screen. I can immerse myself in reading a book. And yes, we need to promote reading as an enjoyment, a recreation, a source of just developing your knowledge of the world much more than we have. You're right. I mean, schools don't even call them libraries anymore. They call them instructional media centers or whatever. There's even schools in the country. I've seen stories recently where the libraries are being converted to detention and discipline rooms. And you say, you shouldn't be punished by being sent to the library.
Alan, we're chuckling a little bit, but it's kind of degenerated into that, right?
We could go off into the whole subject of social media and what that's done to.
Well, we have to.
Especially the young.
Well, we have to.
Yeah.
Because at the root of all of it, Alan, is we know where this nation stands internationally when it comes to reading. And that was one area that we always were at the top of. And now we have fallen so far that it should be alarming to everybody. Got to go to a break. When we come back on the line, none other than Mr. Alan Borsick. He is a senior fellow in law and public policy at Marquette Law School and a writer for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel on education. You can join us at 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
It worked. Wages went up $2 an hour. There actually are a couple extra childcare businesses open now than there were about a year ago, and that's going to stop. Just Monday, we lost two.
Weekday mornings, 6 till 8, on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow. Wisconsin's home for daily conversations about the state's latest headlines and stories. Weekday mornings from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Hey, son. How are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Mainly sunny skies and calm today with a high of 81. Southwest. 8 to 15.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Miss Alan Borsick. He is a senior fellow in law and public policy at Marquette Law School and also a writer for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel on education. Alan, it's no secret. If a child doesn't learn how to read in those early stages, I've seen it in my time in the school system. young people who can't read in the third grade, in the fourth grade, in the fifth grade. And the longer, I'm sorry, go ahead. Oh, and the longer, Alan,
I'm okay. I'm listening.
And the longer that goes undetected, you've lost that child. And so they wonder why, you know, children in high school just totally shut down. I've seen it with my own eyes. Ninth grade, all the way through. And then school becomes just a place not to learn anymore, but to socialize. And in many instances, it's because the young person doesn't want to be exposed that they can't read. I mean, we can fix this, Alan, but we must fix it in these early stages.
It's a cliche and a truism, and it is true. And this is some across the board politically people would agree on that until third grade, you learn to read, and from fourth grade on up, you read to learn. There's definitely a lot of research that supports that if you're not doing at least okay as a reader by the end of third grade, the correlation with being a dropout, being unsuccessful in the job market 25 years later, whatever, and just not thriving is very high. Goal of getting kids to read by the end of third grade is really important. One of the big debates nationwide, and it showed up in the Wisconsin proceedings in the legislature, was whether to hold kids back if they aren't reading well by the end of third grade, which if it's not done really, really well with a lot of attention individually to the kids is counterproductive. It sounds like a really good idea, except it doesn't work. Eventually, the Republicans who are leading this, particularly a guy named Joel Kitchens, who's a state rep from Sturgeon Bay, backed down because they needed the support of the governor. They didn't want to do something that was just going to get vetoed. So they put in a plan that instead of holding you back in third grade, any kid who isn't reading well by the end of third grade will get additional support, additional time and attention, and going into fourth grade and potentially even beyond until they do reach a competent level. Well, that's a really good goal. It's probably even doable, except it'll take a lot of staff, a lot of resources, a lot of time, and those are things that schools are short of, all schools. Not only the public schools, but the private schools, but especially the public schools, which are in many cases so strapped. I mean, the list starts with Milwaukee Public Schools. How are they going to be able to handle this effectively is a really, really challenging question. And I'm picking a gentler word than I might. I'm not sure it's possible.
So Alan, you hit on something, as you always do. But as a student of the baby boom generation and a student of the 60s, you know, grade school, baby boomers, there were MPS had maybe over 110,000 students, right? Maybe a little bit more than that in the 1960s.
At one point.
You said what?
Yeah, 130,000.
130,000 students. There was no shortage of teachers and educators because teachers and educators were held in high esteem. Is it safe to say that back then?
Generally, yes.
Okay.
Not perfect, but generally I agree with that.
Right. But look today. You know, MPS is, I don't know, down to 70, 60, higher 60s, lower 70s. And even if you add all the other schools' choices, you're still not talking about anywhere near as many children, yet there aren't enough educators. Is it because we no longer hold those educators in the kind of esteem that they did, you know, decades ago? And if not, why?
Well, that's certainly a good question. Generally, I would agree with that, that teachers aren't treated as a being part of a real honored and valuable profession in too many cases, certainly not by everybody and everywhere. But nonetheless, it's a continual problem. I mean, ask any teacher. Morale among teachers took a beating back at the time of Scott Walker's Act 10 in the 2011, and it hasn't really recovered from that, especially in the public schools, I think. And that's, I'm talking about statewide, not to mention that the...
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Alan J. Borsak. He is a senior fellow in law and public policy at Marquette Law School and an education writer for the Milwaukee Journals. You know, I almost wanted to add the Sentinel. It's been gone a little while. But you know, Alan, it's somehow we're supposed to believe that it's only in Milwaukee public schools that this problem with education is occurring, but it's not, right? It's not solely the lack of the ability and of reading and all of the other things that the country is falling behind in education. What do you attribute it to? I mean, I understand in Milwaukee and in a poor area, you know, where the schools aren't the best, but even in suburban areas, Alan, the education is not what it was.
I would agree with that. And there's just, you know, sweeping changes in the social fabric of the country as a whole, of course. You are right that the problems are not only in MPS, even the problems in the city. A lot of the private schools and the charter schools also have big issues. Even the ones that are doing better, and many of them are charter schools, I must say. I give them credit for oftentimes being above the average year after year, but even there, the leaders of those schools would, if they were being honest, and many of them are, would say, we're not doing well enough. I mean, if the average reading, if the average for the city is under 20% of kids are reading at the proficient or advanced levels, and then you got a school that's where it's 25%, that's better, but it's totally, you say, wait a minute, there's so many kids that aren't. In any case, these problems, yes, are statewide. They aren't only in low-income communities. They aren't only in Milwaukee. They are more, to be honest, more concentrated in Milwaukee. I sometimes have referred to MPS, or Milwaukee as a whole, more than just MPS as the state capital of education problems. But there's the whole rest of the state, too, that shouldn't be given a pass.
So Alan, do you think, I mean, that's a catastrophic number, 20 to 25% reading above the level, which means, you know, 80 to 75% beneath. And so when you look at the crime statistics, Alan, there's got to be a correlation between the two, and yet you don't see the alarms that should be continuing to go off, and the priority that this should be in the society. When to look at that and no long term the impacts of that, you would think that would be higher up the food chain, Alan.
You would think that. I totally agree with you. Oh, man, yeah. I tell a story that This would be, I think, last summer, a little over a year ago. I was driving on a Sunday afternoon and in the city, and came upon a place where there was a car on its roof and a fairly chaotic situation. Right. And I was stopped at a red light, and all of a sudden, let's assume teenage boys come running around the corner, followed by two cops with their guns out. And I had two quick reactions. One was, I'm getting out of here, which I did. And the other was, I bet these boys aren't doing well in school. I mean, there is a correlation between being on track in life in so many ways and not being involved in that kind of problem. I mean, if you're doing well in other ways in life, chances are you're doing well in just not getting in trouble and not committing crimes and having a sense of a future, which way too many kids don't have that sense of optimism or whatever you want to call it. Optimism is a good term about why they should care, why they should be engaged. So all these things tie together. I think education, stability in life, housing stability, food stability, these are all huge issues that go beyond schools by far and do impact all the issues that we're facing, and not only in the city, but often in the suburbs around here, too.
You know, Alan, I'm just a lowly talk show host, but what I am is a concerned citizen who has lived in the city where I live my entire life and who's seen those changes and who's been in the schools working, trying to help correct the changes. And it's almost like we fail to understand that these children grow up to be adults. And if we didn't fix it,
yeah.
You right? If we didn't fix it while we had the chance when they're young, well, what are the chances you're going to fix it when they become adults and need things that adults need and are not in a position to get those things, right? And so what they do then is, by any means necessary, they're going to get those things. But I don't understand, as smart as some of the people are, you know, politically, well, maybe they're not as smart as I think they are, that they won't focus on these. On
that could this. Well be true.
You said what, sir?
That could well be true, that they're not as smart as you think they are. Go ahead.
Well, yes, because I see a kid. The last school I was in, Alan, it was a school from K-4 all the way through 12th grade. And I could see
right.
a kid that's 5 years old that is kind of in headed towards, you know, you could see he had some issues. And then I would leave the kindergarten or the preschool. Not preschool, but grades, that grade school, and then go to the middle school in the same building and kind of see that same kid at 5 years old. He's now 13 years old, and they didn't address it while he was five. And now at 13 years old, he's almost impossible to deal with. And then I would leave there and then go to the high school level and see that kid, who's now 17 years old, who's coming to school reeking of marijuana, and we know what he's into. These are things that the wealthiest nation on earth, with the most powerful military, Alan, in the world, can fix if we have the will to do that.
The will, the urgency, the just commitment. I totally agree that you know, a lot of people just, especially if you're living somewhere where things are much better and where kids are doing better and kids are better off in so many ways, and and you say, what's the problem? My kids are doing fine. I think that's been a problem with the power structure and the political structure for a long time, is that, you know, we don't really care enough about solving these things, and yet we're all paying for it in the long run. It isn't like anybody's exempt from the impact of all of these problems.
And Alan, do you know what I do is I extrapolate further into the future after you and I are gone and our generations are gone. And what is it going to be then, right? I mean, you know, it's going to be a whole lot worse. Because our generation does represent some stability. But if we don't fix this thing now, it's really, the society has no concept of what it's going to be. But I do. You know, they've got to smash and grab things. Are you seeing that all over? People are. These smash and grab mobs that are just, that lawlessness is going to be multiplied, you know, decades from now if they don't start working on this issue.
That's another cliche, is kids are the future. And so you look around and say, I'm a little troubled about the future, you know?
Yeah, you know the other part. I'm sorry, go ahead, Alan.
And it's a serious worry, that's all.
You know, and look, you're in a university. You know, we've got all these universities, and they're clearly not going to be enough children. You know, I'm sure the universities are going to take them in. They'll take them in because their resources are going to be necessary. But even long term, younger people who aren't prepared at early ages, the chances of them going on to higher education and succeeding is going to hamper this nation all the way down the line.
You know, in the university world, I was fairly shocked by the story a couple weeks ago about layoffs or staff reductions at the University of Wisconsin in Oshkosh. And they were driven, and understandably so, by a big decline in enrollment across the UW system, across a lot of the private universities in the state. There's a decline in enrollment, and there's a lot of reasons behind that. I think there's more people who feel like a college degree is too expensive, and you know, they don't know if it's justified in terms of career, a lot of serious issues. Nonetheless, ultimately, the educational success of the general population correlates with the quality of life in the general population. The more educated, we'll look at the places in the country that are thriving economically, and almost all of them have higher percentages of college graduates educational attainment at a good level than we happen to have around here, statewide, I'm talking about, and including in the Milwaukee area. So, yes, to me, education is, and will be crucial to the future of quality of life in any place you can name. And so I'll name the entire state of Wisconsin.
So, Alan, does all of this start at the national level? I mean, do we rely, or should we rely on the national educational policies and issues to fuel what happens locally, or is that the problem? I mean, are these things that we need to be working on at the state level and the local levels?
Well, it starts at every level, including, if I may say so, in the home.
Oh, yeah. Well, no question.
It starts at the parenting level and in the stability of housing. But the national level, there's a very mixed record at best of national initiatives paying off. You know, I think of like the great No Child Left Behind law.
Yes, I remember that.
Now, that was passed in 2001 and 2002 and had all these great ambitions and systems. And we're not going to put up with mediocrity and failure to succeed. And of course, it didn't work. decreeing something from the White House or from Congress isn't, there isn't a very good track record of that really paying off big. On the other hand, you can't give the national government a pass. I mean, the setting the tone, setting the leadership, and in many cases funding, whether it's Head Start, whether it's Title I that helps low-income kids, whether it's special education funding, which the federal government has never carried the load that it promised back in the 1970s. But all of these things, there is a sense that there has to be national leadership to make these things happen.
Alan, hang on. We one more break, and so we've got to go to a break. We'll be right back.
Sailors pass the time away and talk about their homes. And there's a girl in this harbor town, and she works laying whiskey down. They say, "Brandy, fetch another round." She serves them whiskey and wine. The sailors say, "Brandy, you're a fine girl.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. My guest is Mr. Alan Borsig. Let's go to the phone lines and Marty. Hey, good morning to you, Marty. How you doing, man?
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you so much for the show. It's very informative. Alan, I enjoy your reading your material all these years. It's very informative. A couple questions real quick. Alan, is there a setup where each student that enters MPS is assigned a counselor, a teacher, a professional? And what I'm thinking is, you know, just for raw numbers, say you got 7,000 professionals in the system and you have 70,000 students, why could not each professional be assigned 10 students to just keep an eye on? Not for a year, not for a semester, but for their entire career, so that each professional would have, you know, third graders, fifth graders, 17-year-olds, but they would be just watching their progression over time. I'm just wondering, is there any system where each student, each family has a counselor that they can stick with for the entire career, despite the moving around and so forth? That's it.
Well, you just, I can answer. So many students are transient in the district. And so, you know, today they're at this address, tomorrow they're at another address. And I'll let Alan respond on the other side of it.
Well, Earl, I think that's a really important point, the instability in kids' life and the high churn in enrollment, and that's not only true in the MPS schools, it's true in all the schools in the city, with just a few exceptions. If I hear about a school where they have a real stable enrollment, I say, then that's a special place. That's a place that's got a culture we ought to be paying attention to, and there are several of them. So instability in kids' lives would certainly be a problem, and also in staffing, for that matter, that to find someone who would stick with a kid from kindergarten through 12th grade, that's there aren't that many careers that span that. But also, I mean, if you talk to staff people and teachers and non-teachers both, in most any school, they'd say, "I've got a full load. I've got my hands full. I'm working, you know, long hours, not only at school, but at home, on weekends, whatever." And many of them, frankly, aren't that good at being counselors. That said, I think this is an interesting idea. If you talk to kids and look at surveys and such and panel discussions with kids, I just was aware of one recently, they say, what did I want in school? I wanted a mentor. I wanted an adult who cared about me. I wanted some relationship with someone who was really a positive influence on me. And in some cases, I'll say that's the most important thing. I don't need, you know, some of the things people think I need. I need someone who cares about me. So to have those kind of relationships is really, really valuable and can be a total life changer.
Alan, what you just said, it should be life-altering for people. Because when I was a child, that was never a thought. I had my parents. You're right. Kids today, even with a parent, and the parent is so overwhelmed singularly with trying to just make it through a day. And these young people know that there's no one who cares for them. And that's what they want. They want a mentor. They want somebody, some adult who can talk to them and tell them it's going to be all right. Right? I mean, they're trying to survive day to day. They can't even begin to project into the future and what the at the end education is going to mean to them. They can't see that.
Yes. And from looking at the parents as a whole, you have to have some, in fact, a lot of empathy and compassion because so many people are struggling so much.
Right.
And you say, nobody says, I'd like to be a bad parent. Nobody says, I'd like my kids to do poorly. But nonetheless, many times kids find themselves in situations where that's going on. The parents have huge problems. The parents are leading lives that are, how do I put this, not very functional.
Right.
And so how do we get to that level of really getting to parenting? That would be a wonderful step forward if we could. And I think a lot of parents would like to do better and could do better. This is a longer than we have time to get into here, but like the world's leading expert on the benefits of early child education is a professor at the University of Chicago. And I had a conversation with him a couple years ago now. And I said, what would be the best use of money? He said, hiring people, and they don't need to be, you know, college graduates and people with master's degrees or anything, but who are trained to go into homes on a volunteer basis and give parents some coaching, some help, some tips on food, on play, on how to talk to your kids, how to structure your day. A lot of parents would really benefit from that and would love it. So it's actually doable, except not very many people are doing that.
You know, Alan, it's unfortunate that we've reached the end of this discussion for this point in time, but because you know, school is starting again, and we don't know that we haven't seen any major changes since the last school year that encourage us to believe things are going to be different. And I think that's the frustrating part of it, Alan. Year in, year out, things don't change.
Yeah. I ran into someone who used to be involved a lot in the education scene a while, and he said, do you feel like you're living Groundhog Day? I mean, the movie is the same day repeats over and over again. And I said, all the time, just things don't change that much. And I wish more changed for the better.
Hey, Alan, thank you as always for spending some time with us. I'll be reaching out to you periodically throughout the school year as always.
I'm glad to be here. I appreciate your interest in the subject, and I appreciate your consistency and steadiness in staying on this. You know, you're an advocate of real high quality.
Hey, thank you very much, Alan, as always. We'll talk soon. Got to go to a break. When we come back, we'll be joined by my good friend, Dr. Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action. We'll be right back.